Book first, I. Strether's first question, when he reached the hotel, was about his friend, yet on his learning that Waymarsh was apparently not to arrive till evening he was not wholly disconcerted. A telegram from him bespeaking a room only if not noisy, reply paid, was produced for the inquirer at the office, so that the understanding they should meet at Chester rather than at Liverpool remained to that extent sound. The same secret principle, however, that had prompted Strether not absolutely to desire Waymarsh's presence at the dock, that had led him thus to postpone for a few hours his enjoyment of it, now operated to make him feel he could still wait without disappointment. They would dine together at the worst, and, with all respect to dear old Waymarsh, if not even, for that matter, to himself, there was little fear that in the sequel they shouldn't see enough of each other. The principle I have just mentioned as operating had been, with the most newly disembarked of the two men, wholly instinctive, the fruit of a sharp sense that, delightful as it would be to find himself looking, after so much separation, into his comrade's face, his business would be a trifle bungled should he simply arrange for this countenance to present itself to the nearing steamer as the first note of Europe. Mixed with everything was the apprehension, already, on Strether's part, that it would, at best, throughout, prove the note of Europe in quite a sufficient degree. That note had been meanwhile, since the previous afternoon, thanks to this happier device, such a consciousness of personal freedom as he hadn't known for years, such a deep taste of change and of having above all for the moment nobody and nothing to consider, as promised already, if headlong hope were not too foolish, to color his adventure with cool success. There were people on the ship with whom he had easily consorted, so far as ease could up to now be imputed to him, and who for the most part plunged straight into the current that set from the landing stage to London. There were others who had invited him to a tryst at the inn and had even invoked his aid for a look round at the beauties of Liverpool. But he had stolen away from everyone alike, had kept no appointment and renewed no acquaintance, had been indifferently aware of the number of persons who esteemed themselves fortunate in being, unlike himself, met, and had even independently, unsociably, alone, without encounter or relapse and by mere quiet evasion, given his afternoon and evening to the immediate and the sensible. They formed a qualified draft of Europe, an afternoon and an evening on the banks of the Mersey, but such as it was he took his potion at least undiluted. He winced a little. Truly, at the thought that Waymarsh might be already at Chester, he reflected that, should he have to describe himself there as having got in so early, it would be difficult to make the interval look particularly eager, but he was like a man who, elatedly finding in his pocket more money than usual, handles it a while and idly and pleasantly chinks it before addressing himself to the business of spending. That he was prepared to be vague to Waymarsh about the hour of the ship's touching, and that he both wanted extremely to see him and enjoyed extremely the duration of delay. These things, it is to be conceived, were early signs in him that his relation to his actual errand might prove none of the simplest. He was burdened, poor Strether, it had better be confessed at the outset, with the oddity of a double consciousness. There was detachment in his zeal and curiosity in his indifference. After the young woman in the glass cage had held up to him across her counter the pale pink leaflet bearing his friend's name, which she neatly pronounced, he turned away to find himself, in the hall, facing a lady who met his eyes as with an intention suddenly determined, and whose features, not freshly young, not markedly fine, but on happy terms with each other, came back to him as from a recent vision. For a moment they stood confronted, then the moment placed her, he had noticed her the day before, noticed her at his previous inn, where, again in the hall, she had been briefly engaged with some people of his own ship's company. Nothing had actually passed between them, and he would as little have been able to say what had been the sign of her face for him on the first occasion as to name the ground of his present recognition. Recognition at any rate appeared to prevail on her own side as well, which would only have added to the mystery. All she now began by saying to him nevertheless was that, having chanced to catch his inquiry, she was moved to ask, by his leave, if it were possibly a question of Mr. Waymarsh of Melrose, Connecticut, Mr. Waymarsh the American lawyer. "Oh yes," he replied, "my very well-known friend. He's to meet me here, coming up from Malvern, and I supposed he'd already have arrived. But he doesn't come till later, and I'm relieved not to have kept him. Do you know him?" Strether wound up. It wasn't till after he had spoken that he became aware of how much there had been in him of response, when the tone of her own rejoinder, as well as the play of something more in her face, something more, that is, than its apparently usual restless light, seemed to notify him. "I've met him at Melrose, where I used sometimes, a good while ago, to stay. I had friends there who were friends of his, and I've been at his house. I won't answer for it that he would know me," Strether's new acquaintance pursued, "but I should be delighted to see him. Perhaps," she added, "I shall, for I'm staying over." She paused while our friend took in these things, and it was as if a good deal of talk had already passed. They even vaguely smiled at it, and Strether presently observed that Mr. Waymarsh would, no doubt, be easily to be seen. This, however, appeared to affect the lady as if she might have advanced too far. She appeared to have no reserves about anything. "Oh," she said, "he won't care." And she immediately thereupon remarked that she believed Strether knew the Munsters being the people he had seen her with at Liverpool. But he didn't, it happened, know the Munsters well enough to give the case much of a lift, so that they were left together as if over the mere laid table of conversation. Her qualification of the mentioned connection had rather removed than placed a dish, and there seemed nothing else to serve. Their attitudes remained, nonetheless, that of not forsaking the board, and the effect of this in turn was to give them the appearance of having accepted each other with an absence of preliminaries practically complete. They moved along the hall together, and Strether's companion threw off that the hotel had the advantage of a garden. He was aware by this time of his strange inconsequence. He had shirked the intimacies of the steamer and had muffled the shock of Waymarsh only to find himself forsaken, in this sudden case, both of avoidance and of caution. He passed, under this unsought protection and before he had so much as gone up to his room, into the garden of the hotel, and at the end of 10 minutes had agreed to meet there again, as soon as he should have made himself tidy, the dispenser of such good assurances. He wanted to look at the town, and they would forthwith look together. It was almost as if she had been in possession and received him as a guest. Her acquaintance with the place presented her in a manner as a hostess, and Strether had a rueful glance for the lady in the glass cage. It was as if this personage had seen herself instantly superseded. When in a quarter of an hour he came down, what his hostess saw, what she might have taken in with a vision kindly adjusted, was the lean, the slightly loose figure of a man of the middle height and something more perhaps than the middle age, a man of 55, whose most immediate signs were a marked bloodless brownness of face, a thick dark mustache, of characteristically American cut, growing strong and falling low, a head of hair still abundant but irregularly streaked with gray, and a nose of bold free prominence, the even line, the high finish, as it might have been called, of which, had a certain effect of mitigation. A perpetual pair of glasses astride of this fine ridge, and a line, unusually deep and drawn, the prolonged pen stroke of time, accompanying the curve of the mustache from nostril to chin, did something to complete the facial furniture that an attentive observer would have seen catalogued, on the spot, in the vision of the other party to Strether's appointment. She waited for him in the garden, the other party, drawing on a pair of singularly fresh soft and elastic light gloves and presenting herself with a superficial readiness which, as he approached her over the small smooth lawn and in the watery English sunshine, he might, with his rougher preparation, have marked as the model for such an occasion. She had, this lady, a perfect plain propriety, an expensive subdued suitability, that her companion was not free to analyze, but that struck him, so that his consciousness of it was instantly acute, as a quality quite new to him. Before reaching her he stopped on the grass and went through the form of feeling for something, possibly forgotten, in the light overcoat he carried on his arm, yet the essence of the act was no more than the impulse to gain time. Nothing could have been odder than Strether's sense of himself as at that moment launched in something of which the sense would be quite disconnected from the sense of his past and which was literally beginning there and then. It had begun in fact already upstairs and before the dressing glass that struck him as blocking further, so strangely, the dimness of the window of his dull bedroom, begun with a sharper survey of the elements of appearance than he had for a long time been moved to make. He had during those moments felt these elements to be not so much to his hand as he should have liked, and then had fallen back on the thought that they were precisely a matter as to which help was supposed to come from what he was about to do. He was about to go up to London, so that hat and necktie might wait. What had come as straight to him as a ball in a well-played game, and caught moreover not less neatly, was just the air, in the person of his friend, of having seen and chosen, the air of achieved possession of those vague qualities and quantities that collectively figured to him as the advantage snatched from lucky chances. Without pomp or circumstance, certainly, as her original address to him, equally with his own response, had been, he would have sketched to himself his impression of her as, well, she's more thoroughly civilized. If more thoroughly than underscore whom would not have been for him a sequel to this remark, that was just by reason of his deep consciousness of the bearing of his comparison. The amusement, at all events, of a civilization intenser was what, familiar compatriot as she was, with the full tone of the compatriot and the rattling link not with mystery but only with dear dyspeptic Waymarsh, she appeared distinctly to promise. His pause while he felt in his overcoat was positively the pause of confidence, and it enabled his eyes to make out as much of a case for her, in proportion, as her own made out for himself. She affected him as almost insolently young, but an easily carried 35 could still do that. She was, however, like himself marked and wan, only it naturally couldn't have been known to him how much a spectator looking from one to the other might have discerned that they had in common. It wouldn't for such a spectator have been altogether insupposable that, each so finely brown and so sharply spare, each confessing so to dense of surface and aids to sight, to a disproportionate nose and a head delicately or grossly grizzled, they might have been brother and sister. On this ground indeed there would have been a residuum of difference, such a sister having surely known in respect to such a brother the extremity of separation, and such a brother now feeling in respect to such a sister the extremity of surprise. Surprise, it was true, was not on the other hand what the eyes of Strether's friend most showed him while she gave him, stroking her gloves smoother, the time he appreciated. They had taken hold of him straightway measuring him up and down as if they knew how, as if he were human material they had already in some sort handled. Their possessor was in truth, it may be communicated, the mistress of 100 cases or categories, receptacles of the mind, subdivisions for convenience, in which, from a full experience, she pigeonholed her fellow mortals with a hand as free as that of a compositor scattering type. She was as equipped in this particular as Strether was the reverse, and it made an opposition between them which he might well have shrunk from submitting to if he had fully suspected it. So far as he did suspect it he was on the contrary, after a short shake of his consciousness, as pleasantly passive as might be. He really had a sort of sense of what she knew. He had quite the sense that she knew things he did and though this was a concession that in general he found not easy to make to women, he made it now as good-humoredly as if it lifted a burden. His eyes were so quiet behind his eternal nippers that they might almost have been absent without changing his face, which took its expression mainly, and not least its stamp of sensibility, from other sources, surface and grain and form. He joined his guide in an instant, and then felt she had profited still better than he by his having been for the moments just mentioned, so at the disposal of her intelligence. She knew even intimate things about him that he hadn't yet told her and perhaps never would. He wasn't unaware that he had told her rather remarkably many for the time, but these were not the real ones. Some of the real ones, however, precisely, were what she knew. They were to pass again through the hall of the inn to get into the street, and it was here she presently checked him with a question. "Have you looked up my name?" He could only stop with a laugh. "Have you looked up mine?" "Oh dear, yes, as soon as you left me. I went to the office and asked. Hadn't underscore you underscore better do the same?" He wondered. "Find out who you are? After the uplifted young woman there has seen us thus scrape acquaintance." She laughed on her side now at the shade of alarm in his amusement. "Isn't it a reason the more? If what you're afraid of is the injury for me, my being seen to walk off with a gentleman who has to ask who I am, I assure you I don't in the least mind. Here, however," she continued, "is my card, and as I find there's something else again I have to say at the office, you can just study it during the moment I leave you." She left him after he had taken from her the small pasteboard she had extracted from her pocketbook, and he had extracted another from his own, to exchange with it, before she came back. He read thus the simple designation Maria Gostry, to which was attached, in a corner of the card, with a number, the name of a street, presumably in Paris, without other appreciable identity than its foreignness. He put the card into his waistcoat pocket, keeping his own meanwhile in evidence, and as he leaned against the doorpost he met with the smile of a straying thought what the expanse before the hotel offered to his view. It was positively droll to him that he should already have Maria Gostry, whoever she was, of which he hadn't really the least idea, in a place of safekeeping. He had somehow an assurance that he should carefully preserve the little token he had just tucked in. He gazed with unseeing lingering eyes as he followed some of the implications of his act, asking himself if he really felt admonished to qualify it as disloyal. It was prompt, it was possibly even premature, and there was little doubt of the expression of face the sight of it would have produced in a certain person. But if it was wrong, why then he had better not have come out at all. At this, poor man, had he already, and even before meeting Waymarsh, arrived. He had believed he had a limit, but the limit had been transcended within 36 hours. By how long a space on the plane of manners or even of morals, moreover, he felt still more sharply after Maria Gostry had come back to him and with a gay decisive so now. Led him forth into the world. This counted, it struck him as he walked beside her with his overcoat on an arm, his umbrella under another and his personal pasteboard a little stiffly retained between forefinger and thumb, this struck him as really, in comparison his introduction to things. It hadn't been Europe at Liverpool no, not even in the dreadful delightful impressive streets the night before, to the extent his present companion made it so. She hadn't yet done that so much as when, After their walk had lasted a few minutes and he had had time to wonder if a couple of sidelong glances from her meant that he had best have put on gloves, she almost pulled him up with an amused challenge. But why, fondly as it's so easy to imagine you're clinging to it, don't you put it away? Or if it's an inconvenience to you to carry it, one's often glad to have one's card back. The fortune one spends in them. Then he saw both that his way of marching with his own prepared tribute had affected her as a deviation in one of those directions he couldn't yet measure, and that she supposed this emblem to be still the one he had received from her. He accordingly handed her the card as if in restitution, but as soon as she had it she felt the difference and, with her eyes on it, stopped short for apology. "I like," she observed, "your name." "Oh," he answered, "you won't have heard of it." Yet he had his reasons for not being sure but that she perhaps might. It was but too visible. She read it over again as one who had never seen it. "Mr. Lewis Lambert Strether," she sounded it almost as freely as for any stranger. She repeated, however, that she liked it, particularly the Lewis Lambert. "It's the name of a novel of Balzac's." "Oh, I know that," said Strether. "But the novel's an awfully bad one." "I know that too," Strether smiled. To which he added with an irrelevance that was only superficial, "I come from Woollett, Massachusetts." It made her, for some reason, the irrelevance or whatever, laugh. Balzac had described many cities, but hadn't described Woollett, Massachusetts. "You say that," she returned, as if you wanted one immediately to know the worst. "Oh, I think it's a thing," he said, "that you must already have made out. I feel it so that I certainly must look it, speak it, and, as people say there, act it. It sticks out of me, and you knew surely for yourself as soon as you looked at me."
"The worst, you mean?"
"Well, the fact of where I come from. There at any rate it underscores underscore, so that you won't be able, if anything happens, to say I've not been straight with you."
"I see," and Miss Gostrey looked really interested in the point he had made. "But what do you think of his happening?" Though he wasn't shy, which was rather anomalous, Strether gazed about without meeting her eyes, a motion that was frequent with him in talk, yet of which his words often seemed not at all the effect.
"Why, that you should find me too hopeless." With which they walked on again together while she answered, as they went, that the most hopeless of her countryfolk were in general precisely those she liked best. All sorts of other pleasant small things that were yet large for him, flowered in the air of the occasion, but the bearing of the occasion itself on matters still remote concerns us too closely to permit us to multiply our illustrations. Two or three, however, in truth, we should perhaps regret to lose. The tortuous wall, girdle, long since snapped, of the little swollen city, half held in place by careful civic hands, wanders in narrow file between parapets but smoothed by peaceful generations, pausing here and there for a dismantled gate or a bridged gap, with rises and drops, steps up and steps down, queer twists, queer contacts, peeps into homely streets and under the brows of gables, views of cathedral tower and waterside fields, of huddled English town and ordered English country. Too deep almost for words was the delight of these things to Strether, yet as deeply mixed with it were certain images of his inward picture. He had trod this walks in the far-off time, at 25, but that, instead of spoiling it, only enriched it for present feeling and marked his renewal as a thing substantial enough to share. It was with Waymarsh he should have shared it, and he was now accordingly taking from him something that was his due. He looked repeatedly at his watch, and when he had done so for the fifth time Miss Gostrey took him up. "You're doing something that you think not right." It so touched the place that he quite changed color and his laugh grew almost awkward. "Am I enjoying it as much as underscore that?"
"You're not enjoying it, I think, so much as you ought."
"I see," he appeared thoughtfully to agree. "Great is my privilege."
"Oh, it's not your privilege. It has nothing to do with underscore me underscore. It has to do with yourself. Your failure's general."
"Ah, there you are." He laughed. "It's the failure of Woollett. Underscore that apostrophe s underscore general. The failure to enjoy," Miss Gostrey explained, "is what I mean."
"Precisely. Woollett isn't sure it ought to enjoy. If it were it would. But it hasn't, poor thing," Strether continued, "any want to show it how. It's not like me. I have somebody." They had stopped, in the afternoon sunshine, constantly pausing, in their stroll, for the sharper sense of what they saw, and Strether rested on one of the high sides of the old stony groove of the little rampart. He leaned back on this support with his face to the tower of the cathedral, now admirably commanded by their station, the high red-brown mass, square and subordinately spired and crocketed, retouched and restored, but charming to his long-sealed eyes and with the first swallows of the year weaving their flight all round it. Miss Gostrey lingered near him, full of an air, to which she more and more justified her right, of understanding the effect of things. She quite concurred. You've indeed somebody. And she added, I wish you underscore would underscore let me show you how. Oh, I'm afraid of you. He cheerfully pleaded. She kept on him a moment, through her glasses and through his own, a certain pleasant pointedness. Ah no, you're not. You're not in the least, thank goodness. If you had been, we shouldn't so soon have found ourselves here together. I think, she comfortably concluded, you trust me. I think I do. But that's exactly what I'm afraid of. I shouldn't mind if I didn't. It's falling thus in 20 minutes so utterly into your hands. I dare say, Strether continued, it's a sort of thing you're thoroughly familiar with, but nothing more extraordinary has ever happened to me. She watched him with all her kindness. That means simply that you've recognized me, which underscore is underscore rather beautiful and rare. You see what I am. As on this, however, he protested, with a good-humored headshake, a resignation of any such claim, she had a moment of explanation. If you'll only come on further as you underscore have underscore come, you'll at any rate make out. My own fate has been too many for me, and I've succumbed to it. I'm a general guide, to Europe, don't you know? I wait for people, I put them through. I pick them up, I set them down. I'm a sort of superior courier maid. I'm a companion at large. I take people, as I've told you, about. I never sought it, it has come to me. It has been my fate, and one's fate one accepts. It's a dreadful thing to have to say, in so wicked a world, but I verily believe that, such as you see me, there's nothing I don't know. I know all the shops and the prices, but I know worse things still. I bear on my back the huge load of our national consciousness, or, in other words, for it comes to that, of our nation itself. Of what is our nation composed but of the men and women individually on my shoulders? I don't do it, you know, for any particular advantage. I don't do it, for instance, some people do, you know, for money. Strether could only listen and wonder and weigh his chance. And yet, affected as you are then to so many of your clients, you can scarcely be said to do it for love. He waited a moment. How do we reward you? She had her own hesitation, but you don't. She finally returned, setting him again in motion. They went on, but in a few minutes, though while still thinking over what she had said, he once more took out his watch, mechanically, unconsciously and as if made nervous by the mere exhilaration of what struck him as her strange and cynical wit. He looked at the hour without seeing it, and then, on something again said by his companion, had another pause. You're really in terror of him. He smiled a smile that he almost felt to be sickly. Now you can see why I'm afraid of you. Because I've such illuminations? Why, they're all for your help. It's what I told you, she added, just now. You feel as if this were wrong. He fell back once more, settling himself against the parapet as if to hear more about it. Then get me out. Her face fairly brightened for the joy of the appeal, but, as if it were a question of immediate action, she visibly considered. Out of waiting for him? Of seeing him at all? Oh no, not that, said poor Strether, looking grave. I've got to wait for him, and I want very much to see him. But out of the terror. You did put your finger on it a few minutes ago. It's general, but it avails itself of particular occasions. That's what it's doing for me now. I'm always considering something else, I mean, than the thing of the moment. The obsession of the other thing is the terror. I'm considering at present, for instance, something else than underscore you underscore. She listened with charming earnestness. Oh, you oughtn't to do that. It's what I admit. Make it then impossible. She continued to think. Is it really an order from you? That I shall take the job? Underscore will underscore you give yourself up? Poor Strether heaved his sigh. If I only could. But that's the deuce of it, that I never can. No, I can't. She wasn't, however, discouraged. But you want to at least? Oh, unspeakably. Ah then, if you'll try. And she took over the job, as she had called it, on the spot. Trust me. She exclaimed, and the action of this, as they retraced their steps, was presently to make him pass his hand into her arm in the manner of a benign dependent paternal old person who wishes to be nice to a younger one. If he drew it out again indeed as they approached the inn, this may have been because, after more talk had passed between them, the relation of age, or at least of experience, which, for that matter, had already played to and fro with some freedom, affected him as incurring a readjustment. It was at all events perhaps lucky that they arrived in sufficiently separate fashion within range of the hotel door. The young lady they had left in the glass cage watched as if she had come to await them on the threshold. At her side stood a person equally interested, by his attitude, in their return, And the effect of the sight of whom was instantly to determine for Strether another of those responsive rests that we have had so repeatedly to note. He left it to Miss Gostrey to name, with the fine full bravado as it almost struck him, of her Mr. Waymarsh. What was to have been, what, he more than ever felt as his short stare of suspended welcome took things in, would have been, but for herself, his doom. It was already upon him even at that distance. Mr. Waymarsh was for __ part joyless, too. He had nonetheless to confess to this friend that evening that he knew almost nothing about her, and it was a deficiency that Waymarsh, even with his memory refreshed by contact, by her own prompt and lucid allusions and inquiries, by their having publicly partaken of dinner in her company, and by another stroll, to which she was not a stranger, out into the town to look at the cathedral by moonlight, it was a blank that the resident of Milrose, though admitting acquaintance with the Munsters, professed himself unable to fill. He had no recollection of Miss Gostrey, and two or three questions that she put to him about those members of his circle had, to Strether's observation, the same effect he himself had already more directly felt, the effect of appearing to place all knowledge, for the time, on this original woman's side. It interested him indeed to mark the limits of any such relation for her with his friend as there could possibly be a question of, and it particularly struck him that they were to be marked altogether in Waymarsh's quarter. This added to his own sense of having gone far with her, gave him an early illustration of a much shorter course. There was a certitude he immediately grasped, a conviction that Waymarsh would quite fail, as it were, and on whatever degree of acquaintances to profit by her. There had been after the first interchange among the three a talk of some 5 minutes in the hall, and then the two men had adjourned to the garden, Miss Gostrey for the time disappearing. Strether in due course accompanied his friend to the room he had bespoken and had, before going out, scrupulously visited, where at the end of another half hour he had no less discreetly left him. On leaving him he repaired straight to his own room, but with the prompt effect of feeling the compass of that chamber resented by his condition. There he enjoyed at once the first consequence of their reunion. A place was too small for him after it that had seemed large enough before. He had awaited it with something he would have been sorry, have been almost ashamed not to recognize as emotion, yet with a tacit assumption at the same time that emotion would in the event find itself relieved. The actual oddity was that he was only more excited, and his excitement, to which indeed he would have found it difficult instantly to give a name, brought him once more downstairs and caused him for some minutes vaguely to wonder. He went once more to the garden, he looked into the public room, found Miss Gostrey writing letters and backed out, he roamed, fidgeted and wasted time, but he was to have his more intimate session with his friend before the evening closed. It was late, not till Strether had spent an hour upstairs with him, that this subject consented to betake himself to doubtful rest. Dinner and the subsequent stroll by moonlight, a dream, on Strether's part, of romantic effects rather prosaically merged in a mere missing of thicker coats, had measurably intervened, and this midnight conference was the result of Waymarsh's having, when they were free, as he put it, of their fashionable friend, found the smoking room not quite what he wanted, and yet bet what he wanted less. His most frequent form of words was that he knew himself, and they were applied on this occasion to a certainty of not sleeping. He knew himself well enough to know that he should have a night of prowling unless he should succeed, as a preliminary, in getting prodigiously tired. If the effort directed to this end involved till a late hour the presence of Strether, consisted, that is, in the detention of the latter for full discourse, there was yet an impression of minor discipline involved for our friend in the picture Waymarsh made as he sat in trousers and shirt on the edge of his couch. With his long legs extended and his large back much bent, he nursed alternately, for an almost incredible time, his elbows and his beard. He struck his visitor as extremely, as almost willfully uncomfortable, yet what had this been for Strether, from that first glimpse of him disconcerted in the porch of the hotel, but the predominant notes? The discomfort was in a manner contagious, as well as also in a manner inconsequent and unfounded. The visitor felt that unless he should get used to it, or unless Waymarsh himself should, it would constitute a menace for his own prepared, his own already confirmed, consciousness of the agreeable. On their first going up together to the room Strether had selected for him, Waymarsh had looked it over in silence and with a sigh that represented for his companion, if not the habit of disapprobation, at least the despair of felicity, and this look had recurred to Strether as the key of much he had since observed. Europe, he had begun to gather from these things, had up to now rather failed of its message to him. He hadn't got into tune with it and had at the end of 3 months almost renounced any such expectation. He really appeared at present to insist on that by just perching there with the gas in his eyes. This of itself somehow conveyed the futility of single rectifications in a multiform failure. He had a large handsome head and a large sallow-seamed face, a striking significant physiognomic total, the upper range of which, the great political brow, the thick loose hair, The dark fuliginous eyes, recalled even to a generation whose standard had dreadfully deviated the impressive image, familiar by engravings and busts, of some great national worthy of the earlier part of the mid-century. He was of the personal type, and it was an element in the power and promise that in their early times Strether had found in him, of the American statesman, the statesman trained in congressional halls, of an elder day. The legend had been in later years that as the lower part of his face, which was weak, and slightly crooked, spoiled the likeness, this was the real reason for the growth of his beard, which might have seemed to spoil it for those not in the secret. He shook his mane, he fixed, with his admirable eyes, his auditor or his observer, he wore no glasses and had a way, partly formidable, yet also partly encouraging, as from a representative to a constituent, of looking very hard at those who approached him. He met you as if you had knocked and he had bidden you enter. Strether, who hadn't seen him for so long an interval, apprehended him now with a freshness of taste, and had perhaps never done him such ideal justice. The head was bigger, the eyes finer, than they need have been for the career, but that only meant, after all, that the career was itself expressive. What it expressed at midnight in the gas-glaring bedroom at Chester was that the subject of it had, at the end of years, barely escaped, by flight in time, a general nervous collapse. But this very proof of the full life, as the full life was understood at Milrose, would have made to Strether's imagination an element in which Waymarsh could have floated easily had he only consented to float. Alas, nothing so little resembled floating as the rigor with which, on the edge of his bed, he hugged his posture of prolonged impermanence. It suggested to his comrade something that always, when kept up, worried him, a person established in a railway coach with a forward inclination. It represented the angle at which poor Waymarsh was to sit through the ordeal of Europe. Thanks to the stress of occupation, the strain of professions, the absorption and embarrassment of each, they had not, at home, during years before this sudden brief and almost bewildering reign of comparative ease, found so much as a day for a meeting, a fact that was in some degree an explanation of the sharpness with which most of his friend's features stood out to Strether. Those he had lost sight of since the early time came back to him, others that it was never possible to forget struck him now as sitting, clustered and expectant, like a somewhat defiant family group, on the doorstep of their residence. The room was narrow for its length, and the occupant of the bed thrust so far a pair of slippered feet that the visitor had almost to step over them in his recurrent rebounds from his chair to fidget back and forth. There were marks the friends made on things to talk about, and on things not to, and one of the latter in particular fell like the tap of chalk on the blackboard. Married at 30, Waymarsh had not lived with his wife for 15 years, and it came up vividly between them in the glare of the gas that Strether wasn't to ask about her. He knew they were still separate and that she lived at hotels, traveled in Europe, painted her face and wrote her husband abusive letters, of not one of which, to a certainty, that sufferer spared himself the perusal, but he respected without difficulty the cold twilight that had settled on this side of his companion's life. It was a province in which mystery reigned and as to which Waymarsh had never spoken the informing word. Strether, who wanted to do him the highest justice wherever he underscore could underscore do it, singularly admired him for the dignity of this reserve, and even counted it as one of the grounds all handled and numbered, for ranking him, in the range of their acquaintance, as a success. He underscore was underscore success, Waymarsh, in spite of overwork, or prostration, of sensible shrinkage, of his wife's letters and of his not liking Europe. Strether would have reckoned his own career less futile had he been able to put into it anything so handsome as so much fine silence. One might oneself easily have left Mrs. Waymarsh, and one would assuredly have paid one's tribute to the ideal in covering with that attitude the derision of having been left by her. Her husband had held his tongue and had made a large income, and these were in especial the achievements as to which Strether envied him. Our friend had indeed on his side too a subject for silence, which he fully appreciated, but it was a matter of a different sort, and the figure of the income he had arrived at had never been high enough to look anyone in the face. I don't know as I quite see what you required for. You don't appear sick to speak of. It was of Europe Waymarsh thus finally spoke. Well, said Strether, who fell as much as possible into step, I guess I don't underscore feel underscore sick now that I've started. But I had pretty well run down before I did start. Waymarsh raised his melancholy look. Ain't you about up to your usual average? It was not quite pointedly skeptical, but it seemed somehow a plea for the purest veracity, and it thereby affected our friend as the very voice of Milrose. He had long since made a mental distinction, though never in truth daring to betray it, between the voice of Milrose and the voice even of Woolland. It was the former, he felt, that was most in the real tradition. There had been occasions in his past when the sound of it had reduced him to temporary confusion, and the present, for some reason, suddenly became such another. It was nevertheless no light matter that the very effect of his confusion should be to make him again prevaricate. That description hardly does justice to a man to whom it has done such a lot of good to see __. Waymarsh fixed on his washing stand the silent detached stare with which Milrose in person, as it were, might have marked the unexpectedness of a compliment from Woollett, and Strether for his part, felt once more like Woollett in person. "I mean," his friend presently continued, "that your appearance isn't as bad as I've seen it. It compares favorably with what it was when I last noticed it." On this appearance Waymarsh's eyes yet failed to rest. It was almost as if they obeyed an instinct of propriety, and the effect was still stronger when, always considering the basin and jug, he added, "You've filled out some since then." "I'm afraid I have," Strether laughed. "One does fill out some with all one takes in, and I've taken in, I dare say, more than I've natural room for. I was dog-tired when I sailed. It had the oddest sound of cheerfulness." "I was dog-tired," his companion returned, "when I arrived, and it's this wild hunt for rest that takes all the life out of me. The fact is, Strether, and it's a comfort to have you here at last to say it too, though I don't know, after all, that I've really waited. I've told it to people I've met in the cars. The fact is, such a country as this ain't my kind of country anyway. There ain't a country I've seen over here that seem my kind. Oh, I don't say but what there are plenty of pretty places and remarkable old things, but the trouble is that I don't seem to feel anywhere in tune. That's one of the reasons why I suppose I've gained so little. I haven't had the first sign of that lift I was led to expect." With this he broke out more earnestly. "Look here, I want to go back." His eyes were all attached to Strether's now, for he was one of the men who fully face you when they talk of themselves. This enabled his friend to look at him hard and immediately to appear to the highest advantage in his eyes by doing so. "That's a genial thing to say to a fellow who has come out on purpose to meet you." Nothing could have been finer, on this, than Waymarsh's somber glow. "Have you come out on purpose?" "Well, very largely. I thought from the way you wrote there was something back of it." Strether hesitated. "Back of my desire to be with you? Back of your prostration?" Strether, with a smile made more dim by a certain consciousness, shook his head. "There are all the causes of it." "And no particular cause that seemed most to drive you?" Our friend could at last conscientiously answer. "Yes. 1. There is a matter that has had much to do with my coming out." Waymarsh waited a little. "Too private to mention?" "No, not too private, for only rather complicated." "Well," said Waymarsh, who had waited again, "I lose my mind over here, but I don't know as I've done so yet." "Oh, you shall have the whole thing. But not tonight." Waymarsh seemed to sit stiffer and to hold his elbows tighter. "Why not, if I can't sleep?" "Because, my dear man, I ! "Then where's your prostration?" "Just in that I can put in 8 hours." And Strether brought it out that if Waymarsh didn't gain it was because he didn't go to bed, the result of which was, in its order, that, to do the latter justice, he permitted his friend to insist on his really getting settled. Strether, with a kind coercive hand for it, assisted him to this consummation, and again found his own part in their relation auspiciously enlarged by the smaller touches of lowering the lamp and seeing to a sufficiency of blanket. It somehow ministered for him to indulgence to feel Waymarsh, who looked unnaturally big and black in bed, as much tucked in as a patient in a hospital and, with his covering up to his chin, as much simplified by it. He hovered in vague pity, to be brief, while his companion challenged him out of the bedclothes. "Is she really after you? Is that what's behind?" Strether felt an uneasiness at the direction taken by his companion's insight, but he played a little at uncertainty. "Behind my coming out? Behind your prostration or whatever. It's generally felt, you know, that she follows you up pretty close." Strether's candor was never very far off. "Oh, it has occurred to you that I'm literally running away from Mrs. Newsome?" "Well, I haven't known but what you are. You're a very attractive man, Strether. You've seen for yourself," said Waymarsh, "what that lady downstairs makes of it. Unless indeed," he rambled on with an effect between the ironic and the anxious, "it's you who are after her. Is Mrs. Newsome here?" He spoke as with a droll dread of her. It made his friend, though rather dimly, smile. "Dear no, she's safe, thank goodness, as I think I more and more feel, at home. She thought of coming, but she gave it up. I've come in a manner instead of her, and come to that extent, for you're right in your inference, on her business. So you see there underscores underscore plenty of connection. Waymarsh continued to see at least all there was. Involving accordingly the particular one I've referred to? Strether took another turn about the room, giving a twitch to his companion's blanket and finally gaining the door. His feeling was that of a nurse who had earned personal rest by having made everything straight. Involving more things than I can think of breaking ground on now. But don't be afraid, you shall have them from me, you'll probably find yourself having quite as much of them as you can do with. I shall, if we keep together, very much depend on your impression of some of them. Waymarsh's acknowledgement of this tribute was characteristically indirect. You mean to say you don't believe we underscore will underscore keep together? I only glance at the danger, Strether paternally said, because when I hear you wail to go back I seem to see you open up such possibilities of folly. Waymarsh took it, silent a little, like a large snub child. What are you going to do with me? It was the very question Strether himself had put to Miss Gostrey, and he wondered if he had sounded like that. But underscore he underscore at least could be more definite. I'm going to take you right down to London. Oh, I've been down to London. Waymarsh more softly moaned. I've no use, Strether, for anything down there. Well, said Strether, good-humoredly, I guess you've some use for underscore me underscore. So I've got to go? Oh, you've got to go further yet. Well, Waymarsh sighed, do your damnedest. Only you underscore will underscore tell me before you lead me on all the way? Our friend had again so lost himself, both for amusement and for contrition, in the wonder of whether he had made, in his own challenge that afternoon, such another figure, that he for an instant missed the thread. Tell you? Why what you've got on hand? Strether hesitated. Why it's such a matter as that even if I positively want it I shouldn't be able to keep it from you. Waymarsh gloomily gazed. What does that mean then but that your trip is just underscore for underscore her? For Mrs. Newsome? Oh, it certainly is, as I say. Very much. Then why do you also say it's for me? Strether, in impatience, violently played with his latch. It's simple enough. It's for both of you. Waymarsh at last turned over with a groan. Well, underscore I underscore won't marry you. Neither, when it comes to that. But the visitor had already laughed and escaped. 3. He had told Miss Gostrey he should probably take, for departure with Waymarsh, some afternoon train, and it thereupon in the morning appeared that this lady had made her own plan for an earlier one. She had breakfasted when Strether came into the coffee room, but, Waymarsh not having yet emerged, he was in time to recall her to the terms of their understanding and to pronounce her discretion overdone. She was surely not to break away at the very moment she had created a want. He had met her as she rose from her little table in the window, where, with the morning papers beside her, she reminded him, as he let her know, of Major Pendennis breakfasting at his club, a compliment of which she professed a deep appreciation, and he detained her as pleadingly as if he had already, and notably under pressure of the visions of the night, learned to be unable to do without her. She must teach him at all events, before she went, to order breakfast as breakfast was ordered in Europe, and she must especially sustain him in the problem of ordering for Waymarsh. The latter had laid upon his friend, by desperate sounds through the door of his room, dreadful divine responsibilities in respect to beefsteak and oranges, responsibilities which Miss Gostrey took over with an alertness of action that matched her quick intelligence. She had before this weaned the expatriated from traditions compared with which the matutinal beefsteak was but the creature of an hour, and it was not for her, with some of her memories, to falter in the path, though she freely enough declared, on reflection, that there was always in such cases a choice of opposed policies. There are times when to give them their head, you know. They had gone to wait together in the garden for the dressing of the meal, and Strether found her more suggestive than ever. Well, what is to bring about for them such a complexity of relations, unless indeed we call it a simplicity, that the situation underscore has underscore to wind itself up? They want to go back. And you want them to go? Strether gaily concluded. I always want them to go, and I send them as fast as I can. Oh, I know, you take them to Liverpool. Any port will serve in a storm. I'm, with all my other functions, an agent for repatriation. I want to repeople our stricken country. What will become of it else? I want to discourage others. The ordered English garden, in the freshness of the day, was delightful to Strether, who liked the sound, under his feet, of the tight fine gravel, packed with the chronic damp, and who had the idlest eye for the deep smoothness of turf and the clean curves of paths. Other people? Other countries. Other people, yes. I want to encourage our own. Strether wondered. Not to come? Why then do you meet them, since it doesn't appear to be to stop them? Oh, that they shouldn't come is as yet too much to ask. What I tend to is that they come quickly and return still more so. I meet them to help it to be over as soon as possible, and though I don't stop them, I've my way of putting them through. That's my little system, and, if you want to know, said Maria Gostry, it's my real secret, my innermost mission and use. I only seem, you see, to beguile and approve, but I've thought it all out and I'm working all the while underground. I can't perhaps quite give you my formula, but I think that practically I succeed. I send you back spent. So you stay back. Pass through my hands. We don't turn up again? The further she went, the further he always saw himself able to follow. I don't want your formula, I feel quite enough, as I hinted yesterday, your abysses. Spent. He echoed. If that's how you're arranging so subtly to send me, I thank you for the warning. For a minute, amid the pleasantness, poetry and tariffed items, but all the more, for guests already convicted, a challenge to consumption, they smiled at each other in confirmed fellowship. Do you call it subtlety? It's a plain poor tale. Besides, you're a special case. Oh, special cases, that's weak. She was weak enough, further still, to defer her journey and agree to accompany the gentleman on their own. Might a separate carriage mark her independence, though it was in spite of this to befall after luncheon that she went off alone and that, with a tryst taken for a day of her company in London, they lingered another night. She had, during the morning, spent in a way that he was to remember later on as the very climax of his foretaste, as warm with presentiments, with what he would have called collapses, had all sorts of things out with Strether, and among them the fact that though there was never a moment of her life when she wasn't due somewhere, there was yet scarce a perfidy to others of which she wasn't capable for his sake. She explained moreover that wherever she happened to be she found a dropped thread to pick up, a ragged edge to repair, some familiar appetite in ambush, jumping out as she approached, yet appeasable with a temporary biscuit. It became, on her taking the risk of the deviation imposed on him by her insidious arrangement of his morning meal, a point of honor for her not to fail with Waymarsh of the larger success too, and her subsequent boast to Strether was that she had made their friend fair, and quite without his knowing what was the matter, as Major Pendennis would have fared at the Megatherium. She had made him breakfast like a gentleman, and it was nothing, she forcibly asserted, to what she would yet make him do. She made him participate in the slow reiterated ramble with which, for Strether, the new day amply filled itself, and it was by her art that he somehow had the air, on the ramparts and in the rose, of carrying a point of his own. The three strolled and stared and gossiped, or at least the two did, the case really yielding for their comrade, if analyzed, but the element of stricken silence. This element indeed affected Strether as charged with audible rumblings, but he was conscious of the care of taking it explicitly as a sign of pleasant peace. He wouldn't appeal too much, for that provoked stiffness, yet he wouldn't be too freely tacit, for that suggested giving up. Waymarsh himself adhered to an ambiguous dumbness that might have represented either the growth of a perception or the despair of one, and at times and in places, where the low-browed galleries were darkest, the opposite gables queerest, the solicitations of every kind densest, the others caught him fixing hard some object of minor interest, fixing even at moments nothing discernible, as if he were indulging it with a truce. When he met Strether's eye on such occasions he looked guilty and furtive, fell the next minute into some attitude of retractation. Our friend couldn't show him the right things for fear of provoking some total renouncement, and was tempted even to show him the wrong in order to make him differ with triumph. There were moments when he himself felt shy of professing the full sweetness of the taste of leisure, and there were others when he found himself feeling as if his passages of interchange with the lady at his side might fall upon the third member of their party very much as Mr. Burchell, at Dr. Primrose's fireside, was influenced by the high flights of the visitors from London. The smallest thing so arrested and amused him that he repeatedly almost apologized, brought up afresh in explanation his plea of a previous grind. He was aware at the same time that his grind had been as nothing to Waymarsh's, and he repeatedly confessed that, to cover his frivolity, he was doing his best for his previous virtue. Do what he might, in any case, his previous virtue was still there, and it seemed fairly to stare at him out of the windows of shops that were not as the shops of Woollett, fairly to make him want things that he shouldn't know what to do with. It was by the oddest, the least admissible of laws demoralizing him now, and the way it boldly took was to make him want more wants. These first walks in Europe were in fact a kind of finely lurid intimation of what one might find at the end of that process. Had he come back after long years, in something already so like the evening of life, only to be exposed to it? It was at all events over the shop windows that he made, with Waymarsh, most free, though it would have been easier had not the latter most sensibly yielded to the appeal of the merely useful trades. He pierced with his somber detachment the plate glass of ironmongers and saddlers, while Strether flaunted an affinity with the dealers in stamped letter paper and in smart neckties. Strether was in fact recurrently shameless in the presence of the tailors, though it was just over the heads of the tailors that his countrymen most loftily looked. This gave Miss Gostrey a grasped opportunity to back up Waymarsh at his expense. The weary lawyer, it was unmistakable, had a conception of dress, but that, in view of some of the features of the effect produced, was just what made the danger of insistence on it. Strether wondered if he by this time thought Miss Gostrey less fashionable or Lambert Strether more so, and it appeared probable that most of the remarks exchanged between this latter pair about passers, figures, faces, personal types, exemplified in their degree the disposition to talk as society talked. Was what was happening to himself then, was what already underscore happened, really that a woman of fashion was floating him into society and that an old friend deserted on the brink was watching the force of the current? When the woman of fashion permitted Strether, as she permitted him at the most, the purchase of a pair of gloves, the terms she made about it, the prohibition of neckties and other items till she should be able to guide him through the Burlington Arcade, were such as to fall upon a sensitive ear as a challenge to just imputations. Miss Gostrey was such a woman of fashion as could make without a symptom of vulgar blinking an appointment for the Burlington Arcade. Mere discriminations about a pair of gloves could thus at any rate represent, always for such sensitive ears as were in question, possibilities of something that Strether could make a mark against only as the peril of apparent wantonness. He had quite the consciousness of his new friend, for their companion, that he might have had of a Jesuit in petticoats, a representative of the recruiting interests of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, for Waymarsh, that was to say the enemy, the monster of bulging eyes and far-reaching quivering groping tentacles, was exactly society, exactly the multiplication of shibboleths, exactly the discrimination of types and tones, exactly the wicked old Rose of Chester, rank with feudalism, exactly in short Europe. There was light for observation, however, in an incident that occurred just before they turned back to luncheon. Waymarsh had been for a quarter of an hour exceptionally mute and distant, and something, or other, Strether was never to make out exactly what, proved, as it were, too much for him after his comrades had stood for 3 minutes taking in, while they leaned on an old balustrade that guarded the edge of the row, a particularly crooked and huddled street view. "He thinks us sophisticated, he thinks us worldly, he thinks us wicked, he thinks us all sorts of queer things," Strether reflected, for wondrous were the vague quantities our friend had within a couple of short days acquired the habit of conveniently and conclusively lumping together. There seemed moreover a direct connection between some such inference and a sudden grim dash taken by Waymarsh to the opposite side. This movement was startlingly sudden, and his companions at first supposed him to have espied, to be pursuing, the glimpse of an acquaintance. They next made out, however, that an open door had instantly received him, and they then recognized him as engulfed in the establishment of a jeweler, behind whose glittering front he was lost to view. The fact had somehow the note of a demonstration, and it left each of the others to show a face almost of fear. But Miss Gostrey broke into a laugh. "What's the matter with him?" "Well," said Strether, "he can't stand it."
"But can't stand what?"
"Anything. Europe."
"Then how will that jeweler help him?"
Strether seemed to make it out, from their position, between the interstices of array watches, of close-hung dangling gewgaws. "You'll see."
"Ah, that's just what, if he buys anything, I'm afraid of, that I shall see something rather dreadful."
Strether studied the finer appearances.
"He may buy everything."
"Then don't you think we ought to follow him?"
"Not for worlds. Besides, we can't. We're paralyzed. We exchange a long scared look, we publicly tremble. The thing is, you see, we realize. He has struck for freedom."
She wondered but she laughed. "Ah, what a price to pay. And I was preparing some for him so cheap."
"No, no," Strether went on, frankly amused now, "don't call it that, the kind of freedom you deal in is dear. Then as to justify himself, am I not in _my_ way trying it? It's this.
Being here, you mean, with me?"
"Yes, and talking to you as I do. I've known you a few hours, and I've known _him_ all my life, so that if the ease I thus take with you about him isn't magnificent and the thought of it held him a moment, why it's rather base."
"It's magnificent," said Miss Gostrey to make an end of it. "And you should hear," she added, "the ease _I_ take, and I above all intend to take, with Mr. Waymarsh."
Strether thought. "About _me, ah, that's no equivalent. The equivalent would be Waymarsh's himself serving me up, his remorseless analysis of me. And he'll never do that," he was sadly clear. "He'll never remorselessly analyze me." He quite held her with the authority of this, He'll never say a word to you about me. She took it in, she did it justice, yet after an instant her reason, her restless irony, disposed of it. Of course he won't. For what do you take people, that they're able to say words about anything, able remorselessly to analyze? There are not many like you and me. It will be only because he's too stupid. It stirred in her friend a skeptical echo which was at the same time the protest of the faith of years. Waymarsh stupid? Compared with you. Strether had still his eyes on the jeweler's front, and he waited a moment to answer. He's a success of a kind that I haven't approached. Do you mean he has made money? He makes it, to my belief. And I, said Strether, though with a back quite as bent, have never made anything. I'm a perfectly equipped failure. He feared an instant she'd ask him if he meant he was poor, and he was glad she didn't, for he really didn't know to what the truth on this unpleasant point mightn't have prompted her. She only, however, confirmed his assertion. Thank goodness you're a failure, it's why I so distinguish you. Anything else today is too hideous. Look about you, look at the successes. Would you underscore be underscore one, on your honor? Look, moreover, she continued, at me. For a little accordingly their eyes met. I see, Strether returned. You two are out of it. The superiority you discern in me, she concurred, announces my futility. If you knew, she sighed, the dreams of my youth. But our realities are what has brought us together. We're beaten brothers in arms. He smiled at her kindly enough, but he shook his head. It doesn't alter the fact that you're expensive. You've cost me already. But he had hung fire. Cost you what? Well, my past, in one great lump. But no matter, he laughed, I'll pay with my last penny. Her attention had unfortunately now been engaged by their comrade's return, for Waymarsh met their view as he came out of his shop. I hope he hasn't paid, she said, with underscores underscore last, though I'm convinced he has been splendid, and has been so for you. Ah no, not that. Then for me? Quite as little. Waymarsh was by this time near enough to show signs his friend could read, though he seemed to look almost carefully at nothing in particular. Then for himself? For nobody. For nothing. For freedom. But what has freedom to do with it? Strether's answer was indirect. To be as good as you and me. But different. She had had time to take in their companion's face, and with it, as such things were easy for her, she took in all. Different, yes. But better. If Waymarsh was somber he was also indeed almost sublime. He told them nothing, left his absence unexplained, and though they were convinced he had made some extraordinary purchase they were never to learn its nature. He only glowered grandly at the tops of the old gables. It's the sacred rage, Strether had had further time to say, and this sacred rage was to become between them, for convenient comprehension, the description of one of his periodical necessities. It was Strether who eventually contended that it did make him better than they. But by that time Miss Gostrey was convinced that she didn't want to be better than Strether. Book 2nd, I. Those occasions on which Strether was, in association with the exile from Milrose, to see the sacred rage glimmer through would doubtless have their due periodicity, but our friend had meanwhile to find names for many other matters. On no evening of his life perhaps, as he reflected, had he had to supply so many as on the third of his short stay in London, an evening spent by Miss Gostrey's side at one of the theatres, to which he had found himself transported, without his own hand raised, on the mere expression of a conscientious wonder. She knew her theatre, she knew her play, as she had triumphantly known, 3 days running, everything else, and the moment filled to the brim, for her companion, that apprehension of the interesting which, whether or no the interesting happened to filter through his guide, strained now to its limits his brief opportunity. Waymarsh hadn't come with them, he had seen plays enough, he signified, before Strether had joined him, an affirmation that had its full force when his friend ascertained by questions that he had seen two and a circus. Questions as to what he had seen had on him indeed an effect only less favorable than questions as to what he hadn't. He liked the former to be discriminated, but how could it be done, Strether asked of their constant counselor, without discriminating the latter. Miss Gostrey had dined with him at his hotel, face to face over a small table on which the lighted candles had rose-colored shades, and the rose-colored shades and the small table and the soft fragrance of the lady, had anything to his mere sense ever been so soft? Were so many touches and he scarce knew what positive high picture. He had been to the theater, even to the opera, in Boston, with Mrs. Newsome, more than once acting as her only escort, but there had been no little confronted dinner, no pink lights, no whiff of vague sweetness, as a preliminary, one of the results of which was that at present, mildly rueful, though with a sharpish accent, he actually asked himself underscore why underscore there hadn't. There was much the same difference in his impression of the noticed state of his companion, whose dress was cut down, as he believed the term to be, in respect to shoulders and bosom, in a manner quite other than Mrs. Newsome's, and who wore round her throat a broad red velvet band with an antique jewel. He was rather complacently sure it was antique, attached to it in front. Mrs. Newsome's dress was never in any degree cut down, and she never wore round her throat a broad red velvet band. If she had, moreover, would it ever have served so to carry on and complicate, as he now almost felt, his vision? It would have been absurd of him to trace into ramifications the effect of the ribbon from which Miss Gostrey's trinket depended, had he not for the hour, at the best, been so given over to uncontrolled perceptions. What was it but an uncontrolled perception that his friend's velvet band somehow added, in her appearance, to the value of every other item, to that of her smile and of the way she carried her head, to that of her complexion, of her lips, her teeth, her eyes, her hair? What, certainly, had a man conscious of a man's work in the world to do with red velvet bands? He wouldn't for anything have so exposed himself as to tell Miss Gostrey how much he liked hers, yet he had nonetheless not only caught himself in the act, frivolous, no doubt, idiotic, and above all unexpected, of liking it, he had in addition taken it as a starting point for fresh backward, fresh forward, fresh lateral flights. The manner in which Mrs. Newsome's throat encircled suddenly represented for him, in an alien order, almost as many things as the manner in which Miss Gostrey's was. Mrs. Newsome wore, at operatic hours, a black silk dress, very handsome. He knew it was handsome and an ornament that his memory was able further to identify as a ruche. He had his association indeed with the ruche, but it was rather imperfectly romantic. He had once said to the wearer, and it was as free a remark as he had ever made to her, that she looked, with her ruff and other matters, like Queen Elizabeth, and it had after this in truth been his fancy that, as a consequence of that tenderness and an acceptance of the idea, the form of this special tribute to the frill had grown slightly more marked. The connection, as he sat there and let his imagination roam, was to strike him as vaguely pathetic, but there it all was, and pathetic was doubtless in the conditions the best thing it could possibly be. It had assuredly existed at any rate, for it seemed now to come over him that no gentleman of his age at Woollett could ever, to a lady of Mrs. Newsome's, which was not much less than his, have embarked on such a simile. All sorts of things in fact now seemed to come over him, comparatively few of which his chronicler can hope for space to mention. It came over him for instance that Miss Gostrey looked perhaps like Mary Stuart. Lambert Strether had a candor of fancy which could rest for an instant gratified in such an antithesis. It came over him that never before, no, literally never, had a lady dined with him at a public place before going to the play. The publicity of the place was just, in the matter, for Strether, the rare strange thing. It affected him almost as the achievement of privacy might have affected a man of a different experience. He had married, in the faraway years, so young as to have missed the time natural in Boston for taking girls to the museum, and it was absolutely true of him that, even after the close of the period of conscious detachment occupying the center of his life, the gray middle desert of the two deaths, that of his wife and that, 10 years later, of his boy, he had never taken anyone anywhere. It came over him in especial, though the monition had, as happened, already sounded, fitfully gleamed, in other forms, that the business he had come out on hadn't yet been so brought home to him as by the sight of the people about him. She gave him the impression, his friend, at first, more straight than he got it for himself, gave it simply by saying with offhand illumination, "Oh yes, they're types." But after he had taken it he made to the full his own use of it, both while he kept silence for the four acts and while he talked in the intervals. It was an evening, it was a world of types. And this was a connection above all in which the figures and faces in the stalls were interchangeable with those on the stage. He felt as if the play itself penetrated him with the naked elbow of his neighbor, a great stripped handsome red-haired lady who conversed with a gentleman on her other side in stray dissyllables which had for his ear, in the oddest way in the world, so much sound that he wondered they hadn't more sense, and he recognized by the same law, beyond the footlights, what he was pleased to take for the very flush of English life. He had distracted drops in which he couldn't have said if it were actors or auditors who were most true, and the upshot of which, each time, was the consciousness of new contexts. However he viewed his job it was types he should have to tackle. Those before him and around him were not as the types of Woollett, where, for that matter, it had begun to seem to him that there must only have been the male and the female. These made two exactly, even with the individual varieties. Here, on the other hand, apart from the personal and the sexual range, which might be greater or less, a series of strong stamps had been applied, as it were, from without, stamps that his observation played with as,
Before a glass case on a table, it might have passed from metal to metal and from copper to gold. It befell that in the drama precisely there was a bad woman in a yellow frock who made a pleasant, weak, good-looking young man in perpetual evening dress do the most dreadful things. Strether felt himself on the whole not afraid of the yellow frock, but he was vaguely anxious over a certain kindness into which he found himself drifting for its victim. He hadn't come out, he reminded himself, to be too kind, or indeed to be kind at all, to Chadwick Newsome. Would Chad also be in perpetual evening dress? He somehow rather hoped it. It seemed so to add to underscore this underscore young man's general amenability, though he wondered too if, to fight him with his own weapons, he himself, a thought almost startling, would have likewise to be. This young man furthermore would have been much more easy to handle, at least for underscore him underscore than appeared probable in respect to Chad. It came up for him with Miss Gostrey that there were things of which she would really perhaps after all have heard, and she admitted when a little pressed that she was never quite sure of what she heard as distinguished from things such as, on occasions like the present, she only extravagantly guessed. I seem with this freedom, you see, to have guessed Mr. Chad. He's a young man on whose head high hopes are placed at Willett, a young man a wicked woman has got hold of and whom his family over there have sent you out to rescue. You've accepted the mission of separating him from the wicked woman. Are you quite sure she's very bad for him? Something in his manner showed it as quite pulling him up. Of course we are. Wouldn't underscore you underscore be? Oh, I don't know. One never does one? Beforehand. One can only judge on the facts. Yours are quite new to me, I'm really not in the least, as you see, in possession of them, so it will be awfully interesting to have them from you. If you're satisfied, that's all that's required. I mean if you're sure you underscore or underscore sure it won't do. That he should lead such a life? Rather. Oh, but I don't know, you see, about his life, you've not told me about his life. She may be charming, his life. Charming? Strether stared before him. She's base, venal, out of the streets. I see. And underscore he underscore? Chad, wretched boy? Of what type and temper is he? She went on as Strether had lapsed. Well, the obstinate. It was as if for a moment he had been going to say more and had then controlled himself. That was scarce what she wished. Do you like him? This time he was prompt. No. How underscore can underscore I? Do you mean because of your being so saddled with him? I'm thinking of his mother, said Strether after a moment. He has darkened her admirable life. He spoke with austerity. He has worried her half to death. Oh, that's of course odious. She had a pause as if for renewed emphasis of this truth, but it ended on another note. Is her life very admirable? Extraordinarily. There was so much in the tone that Miss Gostrey had to devote another pause to the appreciation of it. And has he only underscore her, I don't mean the bad woman in Paris, she quickly added, for I assure you I shouldn't even at the best be disposed to allow him more than one. But has he only his mother? He has also a sister, older than himself and married, and they're both remarkably fine women. Very handsome, you mean? This promptitude, almost, as he might have thought, this precipitation, gave him a brief drop, but he came up again. Mrs. Newsome, I think, is handsome. Though she's not, of course, with a son of 28 and a daughter of 30, in her very first youth. She married, however, extremely young. And is wonderful, Miss Gostrey asked, for her age? Strether seemed to feel with a certain disquiet the pressure of it. I don't say she's wonderful. Or rather, he went on the next moment, I do say it. It's exactly what she underscores underscore wonderful. But I wasn't thinking of her appearance, he explained, striking as that doubtless is. I was thinking, well, of many other things. He seemed to look at these as if to mention some of them, then took, pulling himself up, another turn. About Mrs. Pocket people may differ. Is that the daughter's name, Pocket? That's the daughter's name, Strether sturdily confessed. And people may differ, you mean, about underscore her underscore beauty? About everything. But underscore you underscore admire her? He gave his friend a glance as to show how he could bear this I'm perhaps a little afraid of her. Oh, said Miss Gostrey, I see her from here. You may say that I see very fast and very far, but I've already shown you I do. The young man and the two ladies, she went on, are at any rate all the family? Quite all. His father has been dead 10 years, and there's no brother, nor any other sister. They do, said Strether, anything in the world for him. And you do anything in the world for underscore them. He shifted again, she had made it perhaps just a shade too affirmative for his nerves. Oh, I don't know.
You do at any rate this, and the anything they do is represented by their underscore making underscore you do it.
Ah, they couldn't have come, either of them. They're very busy people, and Mrs. Newsom in particular has a large full life. She's moreover highly nervous, and not at all strong.
You mean she's an American invalid?
He carefully distinguished. There's nothing she likes less than to be called one, but she would consent to be one of those things, I think, he laughed, if it were the only way to be the other.
Consent to be an American in order to be an invalid?
No, said Strether, the other way round. She's at any rate delicate, sensitive, high-strung. She puts so much of herself into everything.
Ah, Maria knew these things. That she has nothing left for anything else?
Of course she hasn't.
To whom do you say it?
High-strung?
Don't I spend my life, for them, jamming down the pedal? I see moreover how it has told on you.
Strether took this more lightly.
Oh, I jam down the pedal too.
Well, she lucidly returned, we must from this moment bear on it together with all our might.
And she forged ahead. Have they money?
But it was as if, while her energetic image still held him, her inquiry fell short.
Mrs. Newsom, he wished further to explain, hasn't moreover your courage on the question of contact. If she had come, it would have been to see the person herself.
The woman?
Ah, but that's courage.
No, it's exaltation, which is a very different thing.
Courage, he, however, accommodatingly threw out, is what underscore you underscore have.
She shook her head. You say that only to patch me up, to cover the nudity of my one of exaltation. I've neither the one nor the other. I've mere battered indifference.
I see that what you mean, Miss Gostrey pursued, is that if your friend underscore had underscore come, she would take great views, and the great views, to put it simply, would be too much for her.
Strether looked amused at her notion of the simple, but he adopted her formula. Everything's too much for her.
Ah, then such a service as this of yours
is more for her than anything else?
Yes, far more.
But so long as it isn't too much for underscore me underscore.
Her condition doesn't matter?
Surely not. We leave her condition out, we take it, that is, for granted.
I see it, her condition, as behind and beneath you, yet at the same time I see it as bearing you up.
Oh, it does bear me up.
Strether laughed.
Well then, as yours bears underscore me underscore, nothing more's needed.
With which she put again her question.
Has Mrs. Newsom money?
This time he heeded.
Oh, plenty.
That's the root of the evil. There's money, to very large amounts, in the concern. Chad has had the free use of a great deal. But if he'll pull himself together and come home, all the same, he'll find his account in it.
She had listened with all her interest.
And I hope to goodness you'll find yours.
He'll take up his definite material reward, said Strether without acknowledgement of this.
He's at the parting of the ways. He can come into the business now, he can't come later.
Is there a business?
Lord, yes, a big brave bouncing business.
A roaring trade.
A great shop?
Yes, a workshop, a great production, a great industry.
The concern's a manufacture, and a manufacture that, if it's only properly looked after, may well be on the way to become a monopoly.
It's a little thing they make better, it appears, than other people can, or than other people, at any rate, do.
Mr. Newsom, being a man of ideas, at least in that particular line, Strether explained, put them on it with great effect, and gave the place altogether, in his time, an immense lift.
It's a place in itself?
Well, quite a number of buildings, almost a little industrial colony. But above all, it's a thing.
The article produced.
And what underscore is underscore the article produced?
Strether looked about him as in slight reluctance to say, then the curtain, which he saw about to rise, came to his aid.
I'll tell you next time.
But when the next time came, he only said he'd tell her later on, after they should have left the theater, for she had immediately reverted to their topic, and even for himself the picture of the stage was now overlaid with another image. His postponements, however, made her wonder if the article referred to were anything bad. And she explained that she meant improper or ridiculous or wrong.
But Strether, so far as that went, could satisfy her.
Unmentionable?
Oh no, we constantly talk of it, we are quite familiar and brazen about it.
Only, as a small, trivial, rather ridiculous object of the commonest domestic use, it's just wanting in, what shall I say?
Well, dignity, or the least approach to distinction.
Right here therefore, with everything about us so grand.
In short, he shrank.
It's a false note?
Sadly.
It's vulgar.
But surely not vulgarer than this.
Then on his wondering, as she herself had done, then everything about us.
She seemed a trifle irritated. What do you take this for?
Why for, comparatively, divine? This dreadful London theater?
It's impossible, if you really want to know.
Oh then, laughed Strether, I underscore Don apostrophe T underscore really want to know.
It made between them a pause, which she, however, still fascinated by the mystery of the production at Willett, presently broke.
Rather ridiculous? Clothespins? Sail ratus? Shoe polish?
It brought him round.
No, you don't even burn.
I don't think, you know, you'll guess it.
How then can I judge how vulgar it is?
You'll judge when I do tell you, and he persuaded her to patience. But it may even now frankly be mentioned that he in the sequel never underscore was underscore to tell her. He actually never did so, and it moreover oddly occurred that by the law, within her, of the incalculable, her desire for the information dropped and her attitude to the question converted itself into a positive cultivation of ignorance. In ignorance she could humor her fancy, and that proved a useful freedom. She could treat the little nameless object as indeed unnameable, she could make their abstention enormously definite. There might indeed have been for Strether the portent of this in what she next said.
Is it perhaps then because it's so bad, because your industry as you call it, underscore is underscore so vulgar, that Mr. Chad won't come back? Does he feel detained? Is he staying away not to be mixed up in it?
Oh, Strether laughed, it wouldn't appear, would it? That he feels taints. He's glad enough of the money from it, and the money's his whole basis. There's appreciation in that, I mean as to the allowance his mother has hitherto made him. She has of course the resource of cutting this allowance off, but even then he is unfortunately, and on no small scale, his independent supply, money left him by his grandfather, her own father.
Wouldn't the fact you mentioned then, Miss Gostrey asked, make it just more easy for him to be particular?
Isn't he conceivable as fastidious about the source, the apparent and public source, of his income?
Strether was able quite good-humoredly to entertain the proposition. The source of his grandfather's wealth, and thereby of his own share in it, was not particularly noble.
And what source was it?
Strether cast about.
Well, practices.
In business?
Infamies?
He was an old swindler?
Oh, he said with more emphasis than spirit, I shan't describe underscore him underscore nor narrate his exploits.
Lord, what abysses!
And the late Mr. Newsome then?
Well, what about him?
Was he like the grandfather?
No, he was on the other side of the house.
And he was different.
Miss Gostrey kept it up.
Better?
Her friend for a moment hung fire.
No.
Her comment on his hesitation was scarce the less marked for being mute.
Thank you.
Underscore now underscore don't you see, she went on, why the boy doesn't come home. He's drowning his shame.
His shame?
What shame?
What shame?
Comment ong? Underscore the underscore shame.
But where and when, Strether asked, is underscore the underscore shame, where is any shame, today?
The men I speak of, they did as everyone does, and, besides being ancient history, it was all a matter of appreciation.
She showed how she understood.
Mrs. Newsome has appreciated?
Ah, I can't speak for underscore her exclamation mark underscore.
In the midst of such doings, and, as I understand you, profiting by them, she at least has remained exquisite?
Oh, I can't talk of her.
Strether said.
I thought she was just what you underscore could underscore talk of.
You underscore don apostrophe T underscore trust me, Miss Gostrey after a moment declared.
It had its effect.
Well, her money is spent, her life conceived and carried on with a large beneficence.
That's a kind of expiation of wrongs?
Gracious, she added before he could speak, how intensely you make me see her.
If you see her, Strether dropped, it's all that's necessary.
She really seemed to have her.
I feel that.
She underscore is underscore, in spite of everything, handsome.
This at least enlivened him.
What do you mean by everything?
Well, I mean underscore you underscore.
With which she had one of her swift changes of ground.
You say the concern needs looking after, but doesn't Mrs. Newsome look after it?
So far as possible. She's wonderfully able, but it's not her affair, and her life's a good deal overcharged. She has many, many things.
And you also?
Oh yes, I've many too, if you will.
I see.
But what I mean is, Miss Gostrey amended, do you also look after the business?
Oh no, I don't touch the business.
Only everything else?
Well, yes, some things.
As for instance?
Strether obligingly thought.
Well, the review.
The review?
You have a review?
Certainly.
Woollett has a review, which Mrs. Newsom, for the most part, magnificently pays for and which I, not at all magnificently, edit. My name's on the cover, Strether pursued, and I'm really rather disappointed and hurt that you seem never to have heard of it. She neglected for a moment this grievance. And what kind of a review is it? His serenity was now completely restored. Well, it's green. Do you mean in political color as they say here, in thought? No, I mean the cover's green, of the most lovely shade. And with Mrs. Newsom's name on it too? He waited a little. Oh, as for that, you must judge if she peeps out. She's behind the whole thing, but she's of a delicacy and a discretion. Miss Gostrey took it all. I'm sure. She underscore would underscore be. I don't underrate her. She must be rather a swell. Oh yes, she's rather a swell. A Woollett swell, underscore bon exclamation mark underscore. I like the idea of a Woollett swell. And you must be rather one too, to be so mixed up with her. Oh no, said Strether, that's not the way it works. But she had already taken him up. The way it works, you needn't tell me, is of course that you efface yourself. With my name on the cover? He lucidly objected. Ah, but you don't put it on for yourself. I beg your pardon, that's exactly what I do put it on for. It's exactly the thing that I'm reduced to doing for myself. It seems to rescue a little, you see, from the wreck of hopes and ambitions, the refuse heap of disappointments and failures, my one presentable little scrap of an identity. On this she looked at him as to say many things, but what she at last simply said was, she likes to see it there. You're the bigger swell of the two, she immediately continued, because you think you're not one. She thinks she underscore is underscore one. However, Miss Gostrey added, she thinks you're one too. You're at all events the biggest she can get hold of. She embroidered, she abounded. I don't say it to interfere between you, but on the day she gets hold of a bigger one. Strether had thrown back his head as in silent mirth over something that struck him in her audacity or felicity, and her flight meanwhile was already higher. Therefore close with her. Close with her? He asked as she seemed to hang poised. Before you lose your chance. Their eyes met over it. What do you mean by closing? And what do I mean by your chance? I'll tell you when you tell me all the things underscore you underscore don't. Is it her underscore greatest underscore fad? She briskly pursued. The review? He seemed to wonder how he could best describe it. This resulted however but in a sketch. It's her tribute to the ideal. I see. You go in for tremendous things. We go in for the unpopular side, that is so far as we dare. And how far underscore do underscore you dare? Well, she very far. I much less. I don't begin to have her faith. She provides, said Strether, 3/4 of that. And she provides, as I've confided to you, underscore all underscore the money. It evoked somehow a vision of gold that held for a little Miss Gostrey's eyes, and she looked as if she heard the bright dollars shoveled in. I hope then you make a good thing. I underscore never underscore made a good thing. He at once returned. She just waited. Don't you call it a good thing to be loved? Oh, we're not loved. We're not even hated. We're only just sweetly ignored. She had another pause. You don't trust me. She once more repeated. Don't I, when I lift the last veil? Tell you the very secret of the prison house. Again she met his eyes, but to the result that after an instant her own turned away with impatience. You don't sell? Oh, I'm glad of underscore that exclamation mark underscore, after which however, and before he could protest, she was off again. She's just a underscore moral underscore swell. He accepted gaily enough the definition. Yes, I really think that describes her. But it had for his friend the oddest connection. How does she do her hair? He laughed out. Beautifully. Ah, that doesn't tell me. However, it doesn't matter, I know. It's tremendously neat, a real reproach, quite remarkably thick and without, as yet, a single strand of white. There. He blushed for her realism, but gaped at her truth. You're the very deuce. What else underscore should underscore I be? It was as the very deuce I pounced on you. But don't let it trouble you, for everything but the very deuce, at our age, is a bore and a delusion, and even he himself, after all, but half a joy. With which, on a single sweep of her wing, she resumed. You assist her to expiate, which is rather hard when you've yourself not sinned. It's she who hasn't sinned, Strether replied. I've sinned the most. Ah, Miss Gostrey cynically laughed, what a picture of underscore her exclamation mark underscore have you robbed the widow and the orphan. I've sinned enough, said Strether. Enough for whom? Enough for what? Well, to be where I am.
Thank you. They were disturbed at this moment by the passage between their knees and the back of the seats before them of a gentleman who had been absent during a part of the performance and who now returned for the close, but the interruption left Miss Gostrey time, before the subsequent hush, to express as a sharp finality her sense of the moral of all their talk. I knew you had something up your sleeve. This finality, however, left them in its turn, at the end of the play, as disposed to hang back as if they had still much to say, so that they easily agreed to let everyone go before them. They found an interest in waiting. They made out from the lobby that the night had turned to rain, yet Miss Gostrey let her friend know that he wasn't to see her home. He was simply to put her, by herself, into a four-wheeler, she liked so in London, of wet nights after wild pleasures, thinking things over, on the return, in lonely four-wheelers. This was her great time, she intimated, for pulling herself together. The delays caused by the weather, the struggle for vehicles at the door, gave them occasion to subside on a divan at the back of the vestibule and just beyond the reach of the fresh damp gusts from the street. Here Strether's comrade resumed that free handling of the subject to which his own imagination of it already owed so much. Does your young friend in Paris like you? It had almost, after the interval, startled him. Oh, I hope not. Why should he? Why shouldn't he? Miss Gostrey asked. That your coming down on him need have nothing to do with it. You see more in it, he presently returned, than I. Of course I see you in it. Well then you see more in me. Than you see in yourself? Very likely. That's always one's right. What I was thinking of, she explained, is the possible particular effect on him of his milieu. Oh, his milieu. Strether really felt he could imagine it better now than 3 hours before. Do you mean it can only have been so lowering? Why, that's my very starting point. Yes, but you start so far back. What do his letters say? Nothing. He practically ignores us, or spares us. He doesn't write. I see. But there are all the same, she went on, two quite distinct things that, given the wonderful place he's in, may have happened to him. One is that he may have got brutalized. The other is that he may have got refined. Strether stared. This was a novelty. Refined? Oh, she said quietly, they're refinements. The way of it made him, after looking at her, break into a laugh. You have them. As one of the signs, she continued in the same tone, they constitute perhaps the worst. He thought it over and his gravity returned. Is it a refinement not to answer his mother's letters? She appeared to have a scruple, but she brought it out. Oh, I should say the greatest of all. Well, said Strether, I'm quite content to let it, as one of the signs, pass for the worst that I know he believes he can do what he likes with me. This appeared to strike her. How do you know it? Oh, I'm sure of it. I feel it in my bones. Feel he can do it? Feel that he believes he can. It may come to the same thing. Strether laughed. She wouldn't, however, have this. Nothing for you'll ever come to the same thing as anything else. And she understood what she meant, it seemed, sufficiently to go straight on. You say that if he does break he'll come in for things at home? Quite positively. He'll come in for a particular chance, a chance that any properly constituted young man would jump at. The business has so developed that an opening scarcely apparent 3 years ago, but which his father's will took account of as in certain conditions possible and which, under that will, attaches to Chad's availing himself of it a large contingent advantage, this opening, the conditions having come about, now simply awaits him. His mother has kept it for him, holding out against strong pressure, till the last possible moment. It requires, naturally, as it carries with it a handsome part, a large share in profits, his being on the spot and making a big effort for a big result. That's what I mean by his chance. If he misses it he comes in, as you say, for nothing. And to see that he doesn't miss it is, in a word, what I've come out for. She let it all sink in. What you've come out for then is simply to render him an immense service. Well, poor Strether was willing to take it so. Ah, if you like. He stands, as they say, if you succeed with him, to gain. Oh, a lot of advantages. Strether had them clearly at his fingers' ends. By which you mean of course a lot of money. Well, not only. I'm acting with a sense for him of other things too. Consideration and comfort and security, the general safety of being anchored by a strong chain. He wants, as I see him, to be protected. Protected I mean from life. Ah voila! Her thought fitted with a click. From life. What you underscore really underscore want to get him home for is to marry him.
Well, that's about the size of it. Of course, she said, it's rudimentary. But to anyone in particular?
He smiled at this, looking a little more conscious. You get everything out.
For a moment again their eyes met. You put everything in.
He acknowledged the tribute by telling her. To Mamie Pocock.
She wondered, then gravely, even exquisitely, as if to make the oddity also fit, his own niece?
Oh, you must yourself find a name for the relation. His brother-in-law's sister. Mrs. Jim's sister-in-law.
It seemed to have on Miss Gostrey a certain hardening effect.
And who in the world's Mrs. Jim?
Chad's sister, who is Sarah Newsom. She's married, didn't I mention it?
To Jim Pocock.
Ah yes, she tacitly replied, but he had mentioned things.
Then, however, with all the sound it could have, who in the world's Jim Pocock? She asked.
Why, Sally's husband. That's the only way we distinguish people at Willett, he good-humoredly explained.
And is it a great distinction, being Sally's husband?
He considered. I think there can be scarcely a greater, unless it may become one, in the future, to be Chad's wife.
Then how do they distinguish underscore you?
They underscore don apostrophe t underscore except, as I've told you, by the green cover.
Once more their eyes met on it, and she held him an instant.
The green cover won't, nor will underscore any underscore cover, avail you with underscore me underscore. You are of a depth of duplicity.
Still, she could in her own large grasp of the real condone it. Is Mamie a great underscore party?
Oh, the greatest we have, our prettiest brightest girl.
Miss Gostrey seemed to fix the poor child.
I know what they underscore can underscore be.
And with money?
Not perhaps with a great deal of that, but with so much of everything else that we don't miss it.
We underscore don apostrophe t underscore miss money much, you know, Strether added, in general, in America, in pretty girls.
No, she conceded, but I know also what you do sometimes miss.
And do you, she asked, yourself admire her?
It was a question, he indicated, that there might be several ways of taking, but he decided after an instant for the humorous.
Haven't I sufficiently showed you how I admire underscore any underscore pretty girl?
Her interest in his problem was by this time such that it scarce left her freedom, and she kept close to the facts.
I suppose that at Willett you wanted them, what shall I call it?
Blameless. I mean your young men for your pretty girls.
So did I. Strether confessed.
But you strike there a curious fact, the fact that Willett too accommodates itself to the spirit of the age and the increasing mildness of manners. Everything changes, and I hold that our situation precisely marks that date.
We underscore should underscore prefer them blameless, but we have to make the best of them as we find them.
Since the spirit of the age and the increasing mildness send them so much more to Paris.
You've to take them back as they come.
When they underscore do underscore come.
Underscore bon exclamation mark underscore once more she embraced it all, but she had a moment of thought.
Poor Chad.
Ah, said Strether cheerfully, Mamie will save him.
She was looking away, still in her vision, and she spoke with impatience and almost as if he hadn't understood her.
Underscore you apostrophe ll underscore save him.
That's who'll save him.
Ah, but with Mamie's aid.
Unless indeed you mean, he added, that I shall effect so much more with yours.
It made her at last again look at him.
You'll do more, as you're so much better, than all of us put together.
I think I'm only better since I've known underscore you exclamation mark underscore Strether bravely returned.
The depletion of the place, the shrinkage of the crowd and now comparatively quiet withdrawal of its last elements had already brought them nearer the door and put them in relation with the messenger of whom he bespoke Miss Gostrey's cab. But this left them a few minutes more, which she was clearly in no mood not to use.
You've spoken to me of what, by your success, Mr. Chad stands to gain.
But you've not spoken to me of what you do.
Oh, I've nothing more to gain, said Strether very simply.
She took it as even quite too simple.
You mean you've got it all down?
You've been paid in advance?
I don't talk about payment.
He groaned.
Something in the tone of it pulled her up, but as their messenger still delayed she had another chance and she put it in another way.
What, by failure, do you stand to lose?
He still, however, wouldn't have it.
Nothing. He exclaimed, and on the messengers at this instant reappearing he was able to sink the subject in their responsive advance.
When, a few steps up the street, under a lamp, he had put her into her four-wheeler and she had asked him if the man had called for him no second conveyance, he replied before the door was closed.
You won't take me with you?
Not for the world.
Then I shall walk.
In the rain?
I like the rain,
said Strether. Good night. She kept him a moment, while his hand was on the door, by not answering, after which she answered by repeating her question. What do you stand to lose? Why the question now affected him as other he couldn't have said, he could only this time meet it otherwise. Everything. So I thought. Then you shall succeed. And to that end I'm yours.
Ah, dear lady. He kindly breathed.
Till death. Said Maria Gostrey. Good night, too. Strether called, his second morning in Paris, on the bankers of the Rue Scribe to whom his letter of credit was addressed, and he made this visit attended by Waymarsh, in whose company he had crossed from London 2 days before. They had hastened to the Rue Scribe on the morrow of their arrival, but Strether had not then found the letters the hope of which prompted this errand. He had had as yet none at all, hadn't expected them in London, but had counted on several in Paris, and, disconcerted now, had presently strolled back to the boulevard with a sense of injury that he felt himself taking for as good a start as any other. It would serve, this spur to his spirit, he reflected, as, pausing at the top of the street, he looked up and down the great foreign avenue, it would serve to begin business with. His idea was to begin business immediately, and it did much for him the rest of his day that the beginning of business awaited him. He did little else till night but asked himself what he should do if he hadn't fortunately had so much to do. But he put himself the question in many different situations and connections. What carried him hither and yon was an admirable theory that nothing he could do wouldn't be in some manner related to what he fundamentally had on hand, or would be, should he happen to have a scruple, wasted for it. He did happen to have a scruple about taking no definite step till he should get letters, but this reasoning carried it off. A single day to feel his feet, he had felt them as yet only at Chester and in London, was he could consider, none too much. And having, as he had often privately expressed it, Paris to reckon with, he threw these hours of freshness consciously into the reckoning. They made it continually greater, but that was what it had best be if it was to be anything at all, and he gave himself up till far into the evening, at the theatre and on the return, after the theatre, along the bright congested boulevard, to feeling it grow. Waymarsh had accompanied him this time to the play, and the two men had walked together, as a first stage, from their Gymnase to the Café Riche, into the crowded terrace of which establishment, the night, or rather the morning, for midnight had struck, being bland and populous, they had wedged themselves for refreshment. Waymarsh, as a result of some discussion with his friend, had made a marked virtue of his having now let himself go, and there had been elements of impression in their half-hour over their watered beer glasses that gave him his occasion for conveying that he held this compromise with his stiffer self to have become extreme. He conveyed it, for it was still, after all, his stiffer self who gloomed out of the glare of the terrace, in solemn silence, and there was indeed a great deal of critical silence, every way, between the companions, even till they gained the place to l'opéra, as to the character of their nocturnal progress. This morning their letters, letters which had reached London, apparently all together, the day of Strether's journey, and had taken their time to follow him, so that, after a controlled impulse to go into them in the reception room of the bank, which, reminding him of the post office at Woollett, affected him as the abutment of some transatlantic bridge, he slipped them into the pocket of his loose grey overcoat with a sense of the felicity of carrying them off. Waymarsh, who had had letters yesterday, had had them again today, and Waymarsh suggested in this particular no controlled impulses. The last one he was at all events likely to be observed to struggle with was clearly that of bringing to a premature close any visit to the Rue Scribe. Strether had left him there yesterday. He wanted to see the papers, and he had spent, by what his friend could make out, a succession of hours with the papers. He spoke of the establishment, with emphasis, as a post of superior observation, just as he spoke generally of his actual damnable doom as a device for hiding from him what was going on. Europe was best described, to his mind, as an elaborate engine for dissociating the confined American from that indispensable knowledge, and was accordingly only rendered bearable by these occasional stations of relief, traps for the arrest of wandering Westerners. Strether, on his side, set himself to walk again. He had his relief in his pocket, and indeed, much as he had desired his budget, the growth of restlessness might have been marked in him from the moment he had assured himself of the superscription of most of the missives it contained. This restlessness became therefore his temporary law. He knew he should recognize as soon as see it the best place of all for settling down with his chief correspondent. He had for the next hour an accidental air of looking for it in the windows of shops. He came down the Rue de la Paix in the sun and, passing across the Tuileries and the river, indulged more than once, as if on finding himself determined, in a sudden pause before the bookstalls of the opposite quay. In the garden of the Tuileries he had lingered, on two or three spots, to look,
It was as if the wonderful Paris spring had stayed him as he roamed. The prompt Paris morning struck its cheerful notes, in a soft breeze and a sprinkled smell, in the light flint, over the garden floor, of bareheaded girls with the buckled strap of oblong boxes, in the type of ancient thrifty persons basking betimes where terrace walls were warm, in the blue-frocked brass-labeled officialism of humble rockers and scrapers, in the deep references of a straight-pacing priest or the sharp ones of a white-gaitered red-legged soldier. He watched little brisk figures, figures whose movement was as the tick of the great Paris clock, take their smooth diagonal from point to point. The air had a taste as of something mixed with art, something that presented nature as a wide-capped masterchef. The palace was gone. Strether remembered the palace, and when he gazed into the irremediable void of its site the historic sense in him might have been freely at play, the play under which in Paris indeed it so often winces like a touched nerve. He filled out spaces with dim symbols of scenes. He caught the gleam of white statues at the base of which, with his letters out, he could tilt back a straw-bottomed chair. But his drift was, for reasons, to the other side, and it floated him unspent up the Rue de Seine and as far as the Luxembourg. In the Luxembourg Gardens he pulled up. Here at last he found his nook, and here, on a penny chair from which terraces, alleys, vistas, fountains, little trees and green tubs, little women in white caps and shrill little girls at play all sunnily composed together, he passed an hour in which the cup of his impressions seemed truly to overflow. But a week had elapsed since he quitted the ship, and there were more things in his mind than so few days could account for. More than once, during the time, he had regarded himself as admonished. But the admonition this morning was formidably sharp. It took as it hadn't done yet the form of a question, the question of what he was doing with such an extraordinary sense of escape. This sense was sharpest after he had read his letters, but that was also precisely why the question pressed. Four of the letters were for Mrs. Newsome and none of them short. She had lost no time, had followed on his heels while he moved, so expressing herself that he now could measure the probable frequency with which he should hear. They would arrive, it would seem, her communications. At the rate of several a week, he should be able to count, it might even prove, on more than one by each mail. If he had begun yesterday with a small grievance he had therefore an opportunity to begin today with its opposite. He read the letters successively and slowly, putting others back into his pocket but keeping these for a long time afterwards gathered in his lap. He held them there, lost in thought, as if to prolong the presence of what they gave him, or as if at the least to assure them their part in the constitution of some lucidity. His friend wrote admirably. And her tone was even more in her style than in her voice. He might almost, for the hour, have had to come this distance to get its full carrying quality, yet the plenitude of his consciousness of difference consorted perfectly with the deepened intensity of the connection. It was the difference of being just where he was and underscore as underscore he was, that formed the escape. This difference was so much greater than he had dreamed it would be, and what he finally sat there turning over was the strange logic of his finding himself so free. He felt it in a manner his duty to think out his state, to approve the process, and when he came in fact to trace the steps and add up the items they sufficiently accounted for the sum. He had never expected, that was the truth of it, again to find himself young, and all the years and other things it had taken to make him so were exactly his present arithmetic. He had to make sure of them to put his scruple to rest. It all sprang at bottom from the beauty of Mrs. Newsome's desire that he should be worried with nothing that was not of the essence of his task. By insisting that he should thoroughly intermit and break she had so provided for his freedom that she would, as it were, have only herself to thank. Strether could not at this point indeed have completed his thought by the image of what she might have to thank herself underscore for underscore, the image, at best, of his own likeness, poor Lambert Strether washed up on the sunny strand by the waves of a single day, poor Lambert Strether thankful for breathing time and stiffening himself while he gasped. There he was, and with nothing in his aspect or his posture to scandalize, it was only true that if he had seen Mrs. Newsome coming he would instinctively have jumped up to walk away a little. He would have come round and back to her bravely, but he would have had first to pull himself together. She abounded in news of the situation at home, proved to him how perfectly she was arranging for his absence, told him who would take up this and who take up that exactly where he had left it, gave him in fact chapter and verse for the moral that nothing would suffer. It filled for him, this tone of hers, all the air, yet it struck him at the same time as the hum of vain things. This latter effect was what he tried to justify, and with the success that, grave though the appearance, he at last lighted on a form that was happy. He arrived at it by the inevitable recognition of his having been a fortnight before one of the weariest of men. If ever a man had come off tired, Lambert Strether was that man, and hadn't it been distinctly on the ground of his fatigue that his wonderful friend at home had so felt for him and so contrived? It seemed to him somehow at these instants that, Could he only maintain with sufficient firmness his grasp of that truth, it might become in a manner his compass and his helm. What he wanted most was some idea that would simplify, and nothing would do this so much as the fact that he was done for and finished. If it had been in such a light that he had just detected in his cup the dregs of youth, that was a mere flaw of the surface of his scheme. He was so distinctly fagged out that it must serve precisely as his convenience, and if he could but consistently be good for little enough he might do everything he wanted. Everything he wanted was comprised moreover in a single boon, the common unattainable art of taking things as they came. He appeared to himself to have given his best years to an active appreciation of the way they didn't come, but perhaps, as they would seemingly here be things quite other, this long ache might at last drop to rest. He could easily see that from the moment he should accept the notion of his foredoomed collapse the last thing he would lack would be reasons and memories. Oh, if he underscore should underscore do the sum, no slate would hold the figures. The fact that he had failed, as he considered, in everything, in each relation and in half a dozen trades, as he liked luxuriously to put it, might have made, might still make, for an empty present, but it stood solidly for a crowded past. It had not been, so much achievement missed, a light yoke nor a short load. It was at present as if the backward picture had hung there, the long crooked course, gray in the shadow of his solitude. It had been a dreadful cheerful sociable solitude, a solitude of life or choice, of community. But though there had been people enough all round it, there had been but three or four persons underscore and underscore it. Waymarsh was one of these, and the fact struck him just now as marking the record. Mrs. Newsome was another, and Miss Gostrey had of a sudden shown signs of becoming a third. Beyond, behind them was the pale figure of his real youth, which held against its breast the two presences paler than itself, the young wife he had early lost and the young son he had stupidly sacrificed. He had again and again made out for himself that he might have kept his little boy, his little dull boy who had died at school of rapid diphtheria, if he had not in those years so insanely given himself to merely missing the mother. It was the soreness of his remorse that the child had in all likelihood not really been dull, had been dull, as he had been banished and neglected, mainly because the father had been unwittingly selfish. This was doubtless but the secret habit of sorrow, which had slowly given way to time, yet there remained an ache sharp enough to make the spirit, at the sight now and again of some fair young man just growing up, wince with the thought of an opportunity lost. Had ever a man, he had finally fallen into the way of asking himself, lost so much and even done so much for so little? There had been particular reasons why all yesterday, beyond other days, he should have had in one ear this cold inquiry. His name on the green cover, where he had put it for Mrs. Newsome, expressed him doubtless just enough to make the world as distinguished, both for more and for less, from Woolwood, ask who he was. He had incurred the ridicule of having to have his explanation explained. He was Lambert Strether because he was on the cover, whereas it should have been, for anything like glory, that he was on the cover because he was Lambert Strether. He would have done anything for Mrs. Newsome, have been still more ridiculous, as he might, for that matter, have occasion to be yet, which came to saying that this acceptance of fate was all he had to show at 55. He judged the quantity as small because it underscore was underscore small, and all the more egregiously since it couldn't, as he saw the case, so much as thinkably have been larger. He hadn't had the gift of making the most of what he tried, and if he had tried and tried again, no one but himself knew how often, it appeared to have been that he might demonstrate what else, in default of that, underscore could underscore be made. Old ghosts of experiments came back to him, old drudgeries and delusions, and disgusts, old recoveries with their relapses, old fevers with their chills, broken moments of good faith, others of still better doubt, adventures, for the most part, of the sort qualified as lessons. The special spring that had constantly played for him the day before was the recognition, frequent enough to surprise him, of the promises to himself that he had after his other visit never kept. The reminiscence today most quickened for him was that of the vow taken in the course of the pilgrimage that, newly married, with the war just over, and helplessly young in spite of it, he had recklessly made with the creature who was so much younger still. It had been a bold dash, for which they had taken money set apart for necessities, but kept secret at the moment in a hundred ways, and in none more so than by this private pledge of his own to treat the occasion as a relation formed with the higher culture and see that, as they said at Woolwich, it should bear a good harvest. He had believed, sailing home again, that he had gained something great, and his theory, with an elaborate innocent plan of reading, digesting, coming back even, every few years, had then been to preserve, cherish and extend it. As such plans as these had come to nothing, however, in respect to acquisition still more precious, it was doubtless little enough of a marvel that he should have lost account of that handful of seed. Buried for long years in dark corners, at any rate these few germs had sprouted again under 48 hours of Paris.
The process of yesterday had really been the process of feeling the general stirred life of connections long since individually dropped. Strether had become acquainted even on this ground with short gusts of speculation, sudden flights of fancy in Louvre galleries, hungry gazes through clear plates behind which lemon-colored volumes were as fresh as fruit on the tree. There were instants at which he could ask whether, since there had been fundamentally so little question of his keeping anything, the fate after all decreed for him hadn't been only to underscore be underscore kept. Kept for something, in that event, that he didn't pretend, didn't possibly dare as yet to divine, something that made him hover and wonder and laugh and sigh, made him advance and retreat, feeling half ashamed of his impulse to plunge and more than half afraid of his impulse to wait. He remembered, for instance, how he had gone back in the 60s with lemon-colored volumes in general on the brain as well as with a dozen, selected for his wife too, in his trunk, and nothing had at the moment shown more confidence than this invocation of the finer taste. They were still somewhere at home, the dozen, stale and soiled and never sent to the binder, but what had become of the sharp initiation they represented? They represented now the mere sallow paint on the door of the temple of taste that he had dreamed of raising up, a structure he had practically never carried further. Strether's present highest flights were perhaps those in which this particular lapse figured to him as a symbol of his long grind and his one of odd moments, his want moreover of money, of opportunity, of positive dignity. That the memory of the vow of his youth should, in order to throb again, have had to wait for this last, as he felt it, of all his accidents, that was surely proof enough of how his conscience had been encumbered. If any further proof were needed, it would have been to be found in the fact that, as he perfectly now saw, he had ceased even to measure his meagerness, a meagerness that sprawled, in this retrospect, vague and comprehensive, stretching back like some unmapped hinterland from a rough coast settlement. His conscience had been amusing itself for the 48 hours by forbidding him the purchase of a book. He held off from that, held off from everything, from the moment he didn't yet call on Chant he wouldn't for the world have taken any other step. On this evidence, however, of the way they actually affected him, he glared at the lemon-colored covers in confession of the subconsciousness that, all the same, in the great desert of the years, he must have had of them. The green covers at home comprised, by the law of their purpose, no tribute to letters. It was of a mere rich kernel of economics, politics, ethics that, glazed and, as Mrs. Newsome maintained rather against underscore his underscore view, preeminently pleasant to touch, they formed the specious shell. Without therefore any needed instinctive knowledge of what was coming out, in Paris, on the bright highway, he struck himself at present as having more than once flushed with a suspicion, he couldn't otherwise at present be feeling so many fears confirmed. There were movements he was too late for, weren't they, with the fun of them, already spent? There were sequences he had missed and great gaps in the procession, he might have been watching it all recede in a golden cloud of dust. If the playhouse wasn't closed, his seat had at least fallen to somebody else. He had had an uneasy feeling the night before that if he was at the theater at all, though he indeed justified the theater, in the specific sense, and with a grotesqueness to which his imagination did all honor, as something he owed poor Waymarsh, he should have been there with, and as might have been said, underscore for underscore Chad. This suggested the question of whether he could properly have taken him to such a play, and what effect. It was a point that suddenly rose, his peculiar responsibility might be held in general to have on his choice of entertainment. It had literally been present to him at the Gymnase, where one was held moreover comparatively safe, that having his young friend at his side would have been an odd feature of the work of redemption, and this quite in spite of the fact that the picture presented might well, confronted with Chad's own private stage, have seemed the pattern of propriety. He clearly hadn't come out in the name of propriety but to visit unattended equivocal performances, yet still less had he done so to undermine his authority by sharing them with a graceless youth. Was he to renounce all amusement for the sweet sake of that authority? And underscore would underscore such renouncement give him for Chad a moral glamour? The little problem bristled the more by reason of poor Strether's fairly open sense of the irony of things. Were there then sides on which his predicament threatened to look rather droll to him? Should he have to pretend to believe, either to himself or the wretched boy, that there was anything that could make the latter worse? Wasn't some such pretense on the other hand involved in the assumption of possible processes that would make him better? His greatest uneasiness seemed to peep at him out of the imminent impression that almost any acceptance of Paris might give one's authority away. It hung before him this morning, the vast bright Babylon, like some huge iridescent object, a jewel brilliant and hard, in which parts were not to be discriminated nor differences comfortably marked. It twinkled and trembled and melted together, and what seemed all surface one moment seemed all depth the next. It was a place of which, unmistakably, Chad was fond, wherefore if he, Strether, should like it too much, what on earth, with such a bond, would become of either of them. It all depended, of course, which was a gleam of light, on how the too much was measured, though indeed our friend fairly felt, while he prolonged the meditation I describe, that for himself even already a certain measure had been reached. It will have been sufficiently seen that he was not a man to neglect any good chance for reflection. Was it at all possible, for instance, to like Paris enough without liking it too much? He luckily, however, hadn't promised Mrs. Newsome not to like it at all. He was ready to recognize at this stage that such an engagement would have tied his hands. The Luxembourg Gardens were incontestably just so adorable at this hour by reason, in addition to their intrinsic charm, of his not having taken it. The only engagement he had taken, when he looked the thing in the face, was to do what he reasonably could. It upset him a little nonetheless, and after a while to find himself at last remembering on what current of association he had been floated so far. Old imaginations of the Latin Quarter had played their part for him, and he had duly recalled its having been with this scene of rather ominous legend that, like so many young men in fiction as well as in fact, Chad had begun. He was now quite out of it, with his home, as Strether figured the place, in the Boulevard Malesherbes, now, which was perhaps why, repairing, not to fail of justice either, to the elder neighborhood, our friend had felt he could allow for the element of the usual, the immemorial, without courting perturbation. He was not at least in danger of seeing the youth and the particular person flaunt by together, and yet he was in the very air of which, just to feel what the early natural note must have been, he wished most to take counsel. It became at once vivid to him that he had originally had, for a few days, an almost envious vision of the boy's romantic privilege. Melancholy Murger, with Francine and Musette and Rodolphe, at home, was, in the company of the tattered, one, if he not in his single self two or three, of the unbound, the paper-covered dozen on the shelf, and when Chad had written, 5 years ago, after a sojourn then already prolonged to 6 months, that he had decided to go in for economy and the real thing, Strether's fancy had quite fondly accompanied him in this migration, which was to convey him, as they somewhat confusedly learned at Woollett, across the bridges and up the Montagne Saint-Geneviève. This was the region, Chad had been quite distinct about it, in which the best French, and many other things, were to be learned at least cost, and in which all sorts of clever fellows, compatriots there for a purpose, formed an awfully pleasant set. The clever fellows, the friendly countrymen, were mainly young painters, sculptors, architects, medical students, but they were, Chad sagely opined, a much more profitable lot to be with, even on the footing of not being quiet one of them, than the terrible duffs. Strether remembered the edifying discrimination of the American bars and banks round about the Opera. Chad had thrown out, in the communications following this one, for at that time he did once in a while communicate, that several members of a band of earnest workers under one of the great artists had taken him right in, making him dine every night, almost for nothing, at their place, and even pressing him not to neglect the hypothesis of there being as much in him as in any of them. There had been literally a moment at which it appeared there might be something in him. There had been at any rate a moment at which he had written that he didn't know but what a month or two more might see him enrolled in some _atelier_. The season had been one at which Mrs. Newsome was moved to gratitude for small mercies. It had broken on them all as a blessing that their absentee_had_ perhaps a conscience, that he was sated in fine with idleness, was ambitious of variety. The exhibition was doubtless as yet not brilliant, but Strether himself, even by the time much enlisted and immersed, had determined, on the part of the two ladies, a temperate approval and in fact, as he now recollected, a certain austere enthusiasm. But the very next thing that happened had been a dark drop of the curtain. The son and brother had not browsed long on the Montagne Saint-Geneviève, his effective little use of the name of which, like his allusion to the best French, appeared to have been but one of the notes of his rough cunning. The light refreshment of these vain appearances had not accordingly carried any of them very far. On the other hand, it had gained Chad time, it had given him a chance, unchecked, to strike his roots, had paved the way for initiations more direct and more deep. It was Strether's belief that he had been comparatively innocent before this first migration, and even that the first effects of the migration would not have been, without some particular bad accident, to have been deplored. There had been 3 months, he had sufficiently figured it out, in which Chad had wanted to try. He had tried, though not very hard, he had had his little hour of good faith. The weakness of this principle in him was that almost any accident attestedly bad enough was stronger. Such had at any rate markedly been the case for the precipitation of a special series of impressions. They had proved, successively, these impressions, all of Musette and Francine, but Musette and Francine vulgarized by the larger evolution of the type, irresistibly sharp, he had taken up, by what was at the time to be shrinkingly gathered, as it was scantly mentioned,
with one ferociously interested little person after another. Strether had read somewhere the Latin motto, a description of the hours, observed on a clock by a traveler in Spain, and he had been led to apply it in thought to Chad's number 1, number 2, number 3. _ omnes vulnerant, ultimaticat _ they had all morally wounded, the last had morally killed. The last had been longest in possession, that is, of whatever was left of the poor boy's finer mortality. And it hadn't been she, it had been one of her early predecessors, who had determined the second migration, the expensive return and relapse, the exchange again, as was fairly to be presumed, of the vaunted best French for some special variety of the worst. He pulled himself then at last together for his own progress back, not with a feeling that he had taken his walk in vain. He prolonged it a little, in the immediate neighborhood, after he had quitted his chair, and the upshot of the whole morning for him was that his campaign had begun. He had wanted to put himself in relation, and he would be hanged.